Are you ready to get back to normal? Attitudes in Texas on a planned return to business as usual or something closer to it? That story coming up today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. With support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. A new UT Texas Tribune poll on how Texans are feeling about efforts to curb the impact of the coronavirus. Also, how the school lockdown is playing out on the other side of students' laptops. The week in Texas politics with the Texas Tribune, a Willie Big birthday celebration, making out your list for live streams this weekend, and a whole lot more. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time, and we'll help you get the weekend rolling right after this. Well, hello, Walls. Did y'all know a certain redheaded stranger is about to celebrate his birthday? John Spong of Texas Monthly Magazine joins us in a little bit to talk about how to mark Willie's 87th orbit around the sun. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this 24th day of April 2020. I'm David Brown. Happy Friday, one and y'all. How far can officials go in ordering Texans to wear face masks in public? Not as far as Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo wants to go, says the plaintiff in a lawsuit challenging her order to mask up or face a $1,000 fine. Hidalgo's order is set to take effect Monday unless a judge intervenes. The Texas Tribune reports Dr. Stephen Hotze, a Houston area doctor who's also a conservative activist, has filed suit claiming Judge Hidalgo has exceeded her constitutional authority. Hidalgo's move has drawn criticism from some Texas Republican politicians who complain the fine is heavy-handed. Hidalgo declined to comment on the lawsuit, according to the Texas Tribune. More on the week in Texas politics with the Trib a little later in the broadcast. There's a legal dimension to this argument over what officials can and cannot do, but underlying these strictures are attitudes and values. Where do everyday Texans stand? In the tug of war between those who want to maintain social distancing and stay-at-home rules, and those who are urging a relaxation of such orders now in the works at the state level? Well, funny you should ask. Brand new today, the latest University of Texas Texas Tribune poll, this time focusing on what Texans think about the official response to the coronavirus. Here to help us dive into the details, Jim Henson. He's co-director of the poll and head of the Texas Politics Project at UT Austin. Jim, welcome back to the Standard.
Thank you, David. Happy to be here.
Based on the latest, how big of a crisis do Texans see the coronavirus epidemic?
Well, about two-thirds of Texans, 66%, say that it's a significant crisis. Another 26 say it's a serious problem, but not a crisis. So I think that there's a consensus that there is a problem here, even though as we drill down, there's some internal disagreement about how serious and how you reconcile those difficulties with the other obvious economic difficulties that have come with it, and obviously with the oil crash in Texas.
When you talk about these disagreements, should I assume that there are political fault lines here at play?
You know, David, as much as things have changed, some things have stayed the same. And one of the, the most predictable guidelines within looking at the COVID crisis and look at the economy are partisan differences. So in that same item I just mentioned, 91% say it's a significant crisis. 91% of Democrats say it's a significant crisis. Only 6% say it's serious, but it's a serious problem, but not a crisis. Republicans are much more split. 48% of Republicans say it's a significant crisis. 43% say it's a serious problem, but doesn't quite reach crisis proportions.
Part of this, of course, is who you believe, who you trust when it comes to information about what's been going on. What about, did you try to measure trust in, say, what elected officials or health organizations or for that matter, the media are saying about information when it comes to this pandemic?
Yeah, we asked people, you know, in a very simple binary, who do you trust and not trust to give you accurate information about mm-hmm. the coronavirus COVID? At the top of the list, you know, really one of the few consensus points was medical and health professionals. 87% of Texans said that they trusted medical and health professionals, followed by 70% who said they trusted the CDC. And then interestingly enough, given our classic understandings of socialization and social dynamics, 63% said that they trusted their friends and family. Now, at the bottom of that, really, only 17% said they trusted social media and online sources. And no offense intended, 34% said they trusted the news media.
Well, there we have it. I want to get back to what seems to be most concerning, however, because this could sort of fuzz up the numbers a bit. Is it that Texans seem to be more concerned about their health or their risk of catching the coronavirus, or are they more concerned about, like, say, job loss or the economy?
The share of Texans who reported being extremely concerned about unemployment was 50%, mm-hmm. so half. 43% said they were extremely concerned about the U.S. economy, 37% extremely concerned about the Texas economy. You compare that, the people that said that they were extremely concerned about themselves or someone they knew getting infected was 33%. So I think right now, the economic concerns are overwhelming the individual concern about the virus itself.
Now, I guess part of this here, my next question, goes to the timing. I'm not sure when you took this survey, but what did you ask about when Texas should be returning to normal?
Yeah, we were in the field. We came out of the field collecting data the 19th, so we were basically in the field all of last week collecting data. And so we asked people, straightforwardly, when do you think the virus will be contained in the U.S. to the point that, we can go back to social activities and things can return to normal? 9% said we were already there. 21% said sometime in the next few weeks. The most common response was sometime in the next few months is what 41% said. And then the real pessimists, 17% said sometime in the next year, and another 9% said, more than a year. This is another place where, we see some partisan differences. 12% of Republicans said we're already there. Only 5% of Democrats said that. 35% of Republicans said in the next few weeks. Only 7% of Democrats said in the next few weeks. And I think that informs the political dynamic that we're seeing right now about opening up, particularly in Texas.
Jim Henson is director of the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas at Austin, who, along with the Texas Tribune, conducted this latest survey. We'll link to the results at texasstandard.org. Jim, thanks again.
Yes, stay well, David. Thank you.
Last week, a Texas judge ruled that any voter afraid of contracting COVID-19 could request a mail-in ballot. If that ruling is upheld, the state's roughly 16 million registered voters would all be eligible to vote by mail. Could the state handle such a demand? Houston Public Media's Andrew Schneider wanted to find out.
There are less than 200 days remaining until Election Day. Just over 80 days remain before the rescheduled Texas primary runoff. Would that be enough time to figure out a way to allow what could be millions of votes to be cast by mail?
This is a question that is being asked of election administrators all across the country. And one big way you are not going to be ready is by not preparing or planning for it.
That's Myrna Perez. The San Antonio native heads the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center for Justice in New York.
Remember, Texas is not building it from scratch. Texas does have a mail ballot system. It's just a matter of scaling up so that more people can take advantage of it.
That may be oversimplifying the problem. Bob Stein, who teaches political science at Rice University, says Texas has averaged just 6% of its voting by mail since 2012.
To go from 6% to 50%, 60, 70, or 80% is an extremely difficult task.
Stein points out that states that already have universal vote by mail took several years to implement their systems. There are a lot of problems that have to be overcome.
One, you've got to mail everybody who's on the voter registration list a ballot. You have to print a ballot for them, an appropriate ballot for each of their locations. You then have to receive that ballot. You have to verify the ballot is signed by the voter to whom you sent it. You then have to tabulate it. Through all those steps, there are lots of pitfalls.
Pitfalls like ballots that come back unsigned or simply get lost in the mail. Pitfalls like a lack of equipment to scan the hundreds of thousands or millions of extra paper ballots, or a lack of poll workers to do the scanning for fear of the coronavirus.
The average poll worker in Harris County, there are about 6,000 of them that have worked at the polls in recent elections, is over the age of 60. How many of them are going to be eager to work the polls in July?
All of that assumes the U.S. Postal Service is still working at something close to normal. But the post office is on the verge of bankruptcy, and President Trump opposes a bailout. Brandon Rottinghouse teaches political science at the University of Houston.
If the post office cannot do its job, put simply, the state cannot have mail ballots as part of how people vote.
Rice's Bob Stein has been advising the Harris County Clerk's Office.
I don't think that Diane Troutman and the election administrator Michael Wynn can handle something in the area of 300,000 mail ballots and count them in a timely way to give voters confidence about the outcome of the election.
County Clerk Diane Troutman appears to have taken his warnings to heart. In a statement, Troutman told us, Harris County is not prepared to go to a universal all-mail ballot program at this time. She said she'd be asking Commissioner's Court for more funding to expand access to voting by mail and to make polling places as safe and healthy as possible. That's what the Brennan Center's Myrna Perez is advising as well.
Every voter who wants to be able to vote by mail should be able to vote by mail. But we also need safe and healthy polling place options for folks because it's going to be hard to scale it out perfectly. And there are going to be glitches and gaps in the rollout.
Those glitches and gaps could lead to more lawsuits challenging the vote if a big portion of it is done by mail. In Houston, I'm Andrew Schneider.
Social media editor Wells Dunbar is monitoring the talk of Texas. What are you hearing?
Hey, David. We're hearing from our friends and listeners about those thought-provoking figures in the new University of Texas Texas Tribune poll tracking how Texans feel about the response to COVID-19 and when they think the worst will be over. On our Facebook page, Jerry Helfand says the findings give him hope that we can come to a consensus about when to open up the economy, assuming enough testing and contact tracing is done. However, Josh Fredman says it shows the lack of public awareness about the disease. The pandemic is contained right now, he writes, or else there would be far more deaths. But most people haven't been exposed yet, and until there is a vaccine, the risk of a massive resurgence remains. And Dana Rowan adds that polls are one thing, but perhaps they should be trumped by science in this case. Perhaps a better discussion would concern the worth of human life. Several more folks chime in about those findings and other coronavirus related stories as well. I'll be back with more from social media later in the show.
You know he will. By the way, we got some breaking business news. One of Texas's biggest companies, AT&T, is having a change in leadership. Randall Stevenson, who's been CEO for more than 13 years, is leaving. The guy who's been heading up the media division is taking over. More to come.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, dedicated to the fight against cancer through telemedicine. Now more than ever, providing patients with the ability to conduct online virtual appointments is critical. Learn more at texasoncology.com.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. The American Hotel and Lodging Association estimates this pandemic represents the biggest single drop in travel in modern times, worse than after 9/11. The association has forecast the loss of more than 250,000 jobs in the U.S., some 64,000 in Texas alone, or more than two of every five people employed in that sector. In the DFW region, these jobs make up about 11% of the workforce. KERA's Hadi Mawagdi wanted to look beyond the numbers.
Nothing from his 20 years in the industry could have ever prepared John Bonnell for running a restaurant during a global pandemic.
This is the hardest thing for me to wrap my head around. There is not a waiter, a waitress, a bartender, a hostess in the state of Texas. Those jobs literally don't exist right now.
The award-winning chef owns four eateries in Fort Worth, and he says he's had to abandon the idea of fine dining and embrace drive-thru style curbside pickup.
How you doing, sir?
Going up a little bit.
You got a family meal. What else do we need
tonight?
That's it?
Yeah.
No problem. It's 43:30.
For the last few weeks, he and his staff have ditched lobster tails for home-style meals like meatloaf and fried chicken.
This would never be the business model I would start with, but we kind of looked at it as part, how do we limp along until this is over, and part community service.
But this leaner operation means less money coming in. Bonnells had to fire all but 30 of his 260 employees. And he's not alone. According to Visit Fort Worth, about 50% of all independently owned restaurants in the city have completely closed.
The ones that are still open are trying to figure out how to work with 80 to 90% reduction in sales, and that's just across the board.
Hotels are feeling the heat, too. Craig Davis, head of Visit Dallas, says the city's 230 hotels are usually pretty full in the spring, at about 75 to 80% capacity. Now, it's around 5%.
We did a straw poll, and we believe that most hotels have furloughed 90 to 95% of their staff, which is about 60,000 staff.
The leisure and hospitality sector employs 405,000 people, so it's pretty large.
Layla Asani is an economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas and studies the North Texas economy. She says these job losses are especially tough since the region's been booming for the last decade.
We have been one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas, and our employment growth here has been faster than both the U.S. as well as the state of Texas.
Asani says coronavirus has reversed that. And while she can't forecast how things will turn out,
the longer this goes on for, the more likely it is that we will see more business failures. Right? Because less businesses will be able to cash flow their operations.
Businesses like Premier Transportation in Dallas, where Maurice Scott's a chauffeur.
My last ride was March 20th. So that's been, you know, kind of different.
With flights and hotels empty, people don't need rides. Scott's employer, Eric Devlin, founded Premier in 1996. Devlin says the company's in uncharted territory.
In March, April, May, we averaged 250 runs a day, and we're doing four now. Our revenue is off 98%.
Devlin's had to let go of more than 100 employees, some four-fifths of his staff. And for now, his fleet of sedans, SUVs, minibuses, and motor coaches, well, they're all sitting in a garage.
I'm optimistic that we're going to get back to where we were in 2012 or 15 revenue levels, not 2019.
2019 was Premier's best year ever. Devlin says he thought 2020 would be even more lucrative. Instead, he's working late-night shifts as Premier's dispatcher, hoping for more business, hoping he'll get a call telling him that the economy is open again, and hoping he can eventually hire back those 100 people. I'm Hadi Mawagdi in Dallas.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a health and safety-focused workers' compensation provider, reminding Texans that the best way to stick together right now is to stay apart. More at texasmutual.com/coronavirus.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Moms in the U.S. have a really tough job. Half of them are breadwinners in their families, even though they're more likely to earn less than men and be single parents. In the current crisis, many working moms are hitting a breaking point, especially those from low-income areas, as Houston Public Media's Elizabeth Troval reports from the city's historic Third Ward.
37-year-old Sunny is well acquainted with adversity, parental abuse, drug addiction, sexual assault.
Well, at age 7, I was already drinking, and at age 12, I was already using drugs, right?
She's past that now. An Afro-Latina gay single mother, Sunny now lives in Houston's Third Ward with her 5-year-old son, Dolce, the person she says inspired her to get clean.
And I wanted to break that generational curse and start my own story with my little boy, you know?
But Sunny, who asked to go by her first name, feels like she could lose all she's fought for. She can't work right now. She's a freelance HVAC technician and does home repairs.
I can't control the money coming in. I can't go out there and work hard and put myself out there.
She's not sure how she's going to pay rent or if she'll be able to finish her last year of school to become a sheet metal mechanic. For now, she's trying to teach her son, whose daycare closed, feed him, and keep a roof over their heads. She says she's so scared, it's hard not to cry.
Just my whole life, you know, it's been a nightmare. My whole childhood. I don't want this happen to my kid, you know, I don't want my son to go through anything. I had to go through, and I'm trying to protect it from this world. But this world is breaking those barriers.
She also has to protect her son from getting the coronavirus. He's had multiple surgeries due to life-threatening respiratory problems.
I don't know if my son will be strong enough.
Many mothers are in similar predicaments. Half of U.S. moms are breadwinners for their families. For Black women, it's even higher, 3/4. Rice University researcher Keonta Moore studies health in communities like Third Ward.
If 74% of African American women are their breadwinners and they comprise of the industries that are low wages and that are now deemed as either essential workers or are now shut down, we're talking about a significant impact.
Her new research looks at how COVID-19 will disproportionately impact working class mothers and their kids. She says many moms can't find work. Others are deemed essential. Cashiers, nurse assistants, janitors.
We have a population that already was vulnerable because there were low income. There's also income gaps. And so, women not only comprise these lower wage industries, but also, make less than men, even for the same industry.
On top of all that, working moms are dealing with kids at home since many daycares and schools are closed. In essential jobs, they're at a higher risk of getting sick. And in Houston, employers are not required by law to provide sick leave to their workers. What's more, in Texas, 1 in 4 women of reproductive age don't have health insurance. And for working moms who can't work right now, like Sunny, they're struggling to get the help promised by the federal government.
I trust in God and not the public officials. You know, that's what's today. I trust more in God right now.
Sunny says she's been calling the unemployment office for weeks without any luck. In Houston, I'm Elizabeth Trobel.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with small and mid-sized companies by helping to unify their businesses and achieve digital transformation. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. An executive order from Governor Greg Abbott allows retail stores throughout Texas today to begin reopening if they are able to offer curbside pickup or delivery. El Paso Mayor DeMargo rolled out a complementary measure in the West Texas city last night.
What we've done is, following the governor's directives of last week, we are now going to allow the retail to go, and that has very stringent requirements on retail to go. Says all employees must be trained and screened. They've got to wear a mask. You can only deliver to the customer's trunk of their car on curbside, or it's got to be delivered to their home or by mail.
The El Paso order, in line with the governor's, also bars customers from entering retail establishments. Houston abortion clinics are bracing for a possible influx of patients after a weeks-long legal battle prevented many people from making appointments. Houston Public Media's Jen Rice reports clinics are now resuming operations after a new executive order from Governor Abbott.
A month ago, to save personal protective equipment for treating COVID-19, Abbott ordered doctors to postpone procedures that weren't medically necessary, including abortion. Restrictions have been lifted now, and Bridget Schilling with the Houston-based Clinic Access Support Network says they're preparing for a surge in abortion appointments.
It's going to be a rush, we think, because it's going to be people who need practical support, funding especially.
The month-long delay will have consequences, she says.
People are also going to be much further along in their pregnancies when this big rush happens.
Planned Parenthood's Gulf Freeway location does provide abortion services up until the state's legal limit, 20 weeks, which means they'll be taking on a lot of these patients from across the region. I'm Jen Rice in Houston.
Tomorrow marks the start of the state's 3-day sales tax holiday for emergency supplies. Kevin Lyons with the Texas Comptroller's Office says it's meant to help people prepare for hurricanes and other storms.
We understand the times we're living in, and so we want people to just be able to stay safe. And if you can order things from online from the safety of your own home, that'd be great. If you have to go in the store to purchase things, please use strict social distancing. We want you to not only be able to take advantage of buying these tax-free items, we want you to stay safe when you do it as well.
Tax-free items include household batteries and flashlights under $75 and portable generators under $3,000. Galveston's public beaches will partially reopen on Monday for the first time since late March. In a split vote Thursday, Galveston City Council approved allowing pedestrian visitors in the morning from 6 to 9 to exercise. That includes swimming and surfing. People are not permitted to set up chairs or have picnics on the beach. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Most San Antonio school districts started online lessons in the beginning of April, 2 or 3 weeks after schools were forced to close. Some of the area's highest poverty districts had to wait even longer until students could get access to technology, computers, and the like. But the transition was a challenge for those on the other side of the laptop, too, as Texas Public Radio's Camille Phillips found following a teacher from the classroom to the computer screen.
My name is Christopher Terrazas. I'm a sixth grade teacher at E.T. Wren Middle School, and I teach English, language arts, and reading. I actually teach at the school that I grew up going to.
Christopher Terrazas is 24 and in his second year of teaching. The sudden switch to a virtual classroom is a challenge even for veteran teachers. At the beginning of April, I asked Terrazas to record himself and document how he was feeling. On April 1st, his biggest challenge was just getting in touch with his students.
Because now I'm having to use different types of applications to get in contact with them and try to help them get connected through these online platforms. And that brings its own set of challenges already, because that consumes a lot of your own day. And that's not even touching the tip of the iceberg. And what I mean by that is, you're not really getting to dive into curriculum because you're doing other sorts of things that are more household. I've had at the most about 15 who have been able to reach out and connect with me online out of 72. I wish there was more I could do it from my role as a teacher in this position right now.
Terrazas was discouraged to see social media posts of teachers in other districts that seem to have less problems connecting with students. But his first day of recording also had a bright spot.
My favorite part of the day was getting one particular message from one particular student and their parent. And they mentioned, you know, that they missed school, that they wanted to be in school learning, they missed their friends. And hearing that, I felt incredibly privileged. You know, it makes me realize, hey, my job is important. And there are students who appreciate what you do and, you know, the work that you're doing right now.
Terrazas called his next day of recording, April 2nd, super productive. He had a virtual school faculty meeting in the morning and a Q&A with his school leadership team in the afternoon.
Seeing the investment from other teachers and administration it's just always good to see that. If anything, I guess the biggest challenge that I know I'm going to be facing forward is adapting information that I've done face-to-face, because your words and the way you say things can easily be misinterpreted based off of how you say it. This happened frequently in the classroom where I would say, okay, get your paper and I want you to fold it in half. Saying it isn't enough. You also have to demonstrate what you want.
Terrazas spent the next 2 weeks of April piloting lessons with students who had access to computers and were logged in. One lesson was about the Diary of Anne Frank, a teenager who died in the Holocaust. The other was about Helen Keller, who became deaf and blind before the age of 2 and wrote an autobiography, The Story of My Life.
The section focuses on a teacher who helps a struggling student learn how to adapt in the world. It just fits so perfectly because I was thinking about this theme of teachers right now and what role do they play.
I touched base with Terrazas 10 days later in mid-April. By then, many of the district's students had received laptops, and this was the first day of formal online lessons. Terrazas told me 35 of his 72 students were now logged into his classroom portal. That was more than double the number of students from a week and a half before.
It's not great, but I think for where we started, like, we're improving. And I think it may just be that there's a Maybe it's just not knowing how to access the program, and it is overwhelming. It is new.
Terrazas also told me the Edgewood District asked their middle school and high school teachers to call every parent in their second period class to make sure every student was contacted at least once. Terrazas said he was able to touch base with almost everyone by phone.
Now, looking at it now, I feel I'm in a much better position, and every parent and every student that I've spoken to so far this week has been very receptive. It's real relieving to know that, hey, they want the same things that I want. They want their kids to still be involved in their schooling.
There are still about 20 students who have not logged into his class portal, but he's hopeful they'll all make their way there soon. And he is excited by the opportunity to embrace technology in his classroom. Terrazas says it's a natural fit for him and his students. They're all part of the digital age.
This is the future. You know, technology is going to be a big part of the future. And I think the investment that the schools are making now is, you know, it's a good opportunity for everyone.
Christopher Terrazas is looking forward to his students' next assignment. They'll use a social media-like educational tool called Flipgrid and post video interviews of family members' experiences during the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Camille Phillips in San Antonio.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, working to strengthen public education for all students. More information at raiseyourhandtexas.org. The future of Texas is in our public schools. Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com.
I'm Deidre Gott, live music producer for KUTX, and you're listening to the Texas Standard. The only way we're getting live music right now is on the internet. So here we are with a few quarantine music streams. Let's start with the streaming event BRB Fest, short for Be Right Back. The week-long event, which started Monday, brings you two artists each evening with nods to Austin venues like Antone's, Barracuda, and Hotel Vegas. A couple of the live performances I'm most excited about are tonight's stream with indie rock band Neville and Sabrina Ellis, the lead singer of Sweet Spirit, A Giant Dog, and Heartbones. And Sunday night's stream with Austinite Daniel Francis Doyle and indie folk rock artist Christelle Bufale. Each evening at 8:30 p.m., these live streams will happen on Do512's Facebook page. In 2018, Erica Winterstrom, lead singer of the Heartless Bastards, put out her debut solo album called Sweet Unknown. It's a beautiful, insightful record that I highly recommend listening to, especially now, about embracing self-care and the unknown. It's been a long and twisted highway through some men. This weekend, Winterstrom would have been heading out for another solo tour, but you guessed it, that's not happening. So she'll be streaming live from the Heartless Bastards' Facebook and Instagram accounts tonight at 5 p.m. Speaking of touring, most artists rely on touring to promote new albums, and because of this, many have pushed their album releases to later in the year. But some artists are seizing the opportunity to bring us new musical treats while we shelter at home. One of these artists is seminal LA punk band X, who gifted us with a surprise release of their first album in over 35 years. The band had been quietly working on the album pre-pandemic and was originally aiming for a September release, but surprise! This week, the band dropped the finished album digitally on Bandcamp. John Doe, co-founder of X and now Austin resident, joined KUTX for our new at-home video series to share a few songs and chat about the release. You can watch anytime you want at kutx.org. Don't believe the naysayers, y'all. Live music will be back eventually, and we will be there to see it in person. I'm Deidre Gott, and you're listening to the Texas Standard.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. If you know a thing or two about a certain red-headed stranger from Lubbock, Texas, it's quite likely that's because you've read one of the many articles penned by John Spong, senior editor of Texas Monthly. On Saturday, Spong is swapping his pen for a microphone as he takes to the airwaves of a public radio station in Willie's adopted and unofficial hometown of Austin for an on-air celebration of Willie's 87th birthday. John Spong, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
87th birthday, hard to believe. When was he actually born, though? Because I've heard two stories.
That is one of the great Willie legends, I guess the oldest one. supposedly, Willie's birthday is observed typically on the 29th of April. But the thought is that he was born around midnight, and so that stretches over to the 30th. And Willie being Willie, my understanding is that he celebrates on both days because why wouldn't he?
Because why not? Because he's Willie Nelson. Do you remember the first time you got turned on to Willie Nelson? Were you living in Austin, or do you recall?
I would have been living in Austin, and the deal is I don't recall because, as Jack Ingram mentioned to me once, when you live here, Willie's just kind of the air you breathe, you know? And so I do not recall a time when there was not Willie Nelson in my life. I remember being a little boy and having my dad tell me what a great song Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain was. And he was not a country music fan, but he sure got that one.
You know, it's interesting because Willie Nelson had that Nashville experience. He's born in Texas, moved to Nashville. He came back in a way sort of reinventing himself during that interim period in Nashville. He was wearing the nudie suits and he was, you know, trying to sort of make a living as a songwriter, but also as a performer. But nothing stuck until he returned to Texas and kind of kicked off a new musical movement, sort of an outlaw country, right?
That's right. And it's, you know, it's interesting because if you look at those old pictures, even more than nudie suits, it's turtlenecks.
Yeah.
And it's short hair. And that's just not what people think of. But, you know, it actually bleeds into this cool thing we've been doing at Texas Monthly and that we're building this radio show around. We've been working for about 7 months creating a discography of all of Willie's records and reviewing all of Willie's records and then ranking them. We've found, I think, 143 records. We're ranking them number 143 to number one. And one of the great revelations of that, which, you know, hardcore fans know, is that even though people like to think that he starts being Willie Nelson in the 70s in Austin, and that's where you need to start listening, the fact of the matter is there are some great records in the 60s on RCA and on Liberty. And so even though those pictures don't look right in your mind, it doesn't fit with what you think of when you think of Willie, those are great records.
You know, it's funny, though, because who is Willie Nelson as a performer? On the one hand, I think a lot of people think Redheaded Stranger, which was, you know, an epic album. On the other hand, you have another epic album like Teatro, which is not really, I think it's a stretch to call it a country music album.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of Willie. I mean, if you listen to Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is a record from, I think, 1980, 81, that a lot of people don't remember that well, it's a small group acoustic swing record. There's no drums on it. It's not a country record. Across the Borderline from 1993. Man, that's a breathtaking album. That ain't country, but it's Willie.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. What is Willie and why? What explains his connection to Texas? I mean, he is truly beloved by every Texan I've ever met.
Right. But, you know, I would throw out he's also truly beloved by most people around the world that have even heard of him. And so people ask what he means to Texas. And I think, you know, outside of Texas, they associate him with Texas. They know this is where he's from. He's actually transcended. He's just Willie as far as the rest of the world is concerned. But he considers himself from Texas, and he considers, you know, the independence that he has relied on to do all these things and to follow, you know, the voices in his head as opposed to what, you know, producers or whoever were telling him. I think in his mind, that's all part of the Texas independence streak, and that is the way we think of ourselves here. So it fits. It dovetails.
It's a celebration of a true Texas legend, Willie Nelson. We've been talking with John Spong, senior editor at Texas Monthly, who's going to be hosting this hour-long special Saturday night, KUTX, if you're in the Texas capital city, starting at 6 p.m. You can also stream it no matter where you are over at kutx.org, and we'll have all the details up at texasstandard.org. John, good to talk with you again, sir. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where Horned Frogs strive to be responsible world citizens. More on how a trip to Norway challenged students' perspectives on mass incarceration and justice at tcu.edu/stories.
I'm Jody Edgerton with Typewriter Rodeo. We create custom poems on vintage typewriters. You give us a word, a phrase, anything you like, and we create a poem for you on the spot. Working from home. I just need 10 minutes, everyone. Just 10 solid minutes to get this work done. Yes, fine, I can grab you the bucket of markers first. I just need to be totally focused, please. Tara. Down, girl. Leave the squirrel alone. It's not a big project, but I do need to get this back to the client before end of business today. Hang on. I will get the plunger. Okay, all. I need to get on a virtual call. I think it's a video call. Help. Has anyone seen my pants? Engage business voice now. Hi, great to see you all. Hope you're all hanging in there. Oh, things here? Oh, they're fine. Just fine. Just totally, totally fine. I'm Jody Edgerton with Typewriter Rodeo, and you're listening to Texas Standard.
Support for Typewriter Rodeo comes from Texas Children's Hospital, here to help Texas families navigate this crisis, with regular updates, resources, and advice. More at texaschildrenscoronavirus.org.
That poem comes to us from our friends at Typewriter Rodeo. You got a suggestion? Let us know. Send us your poem-generating idea on social media or just email us, texasstandard@kut.org, and we'll get it out to the rodeo. We can't let Friday come and go without checking in with Alex Samuels, can we? She's Texas Tribune politics reporter. Alex, welcome back.
Yes, happy to be here.
All right, let's talk about the latest here in the coronavirus and crackdown. Governor Greg Abbott planning to make an announcement on reopening the state sometime soon. What's the latest there?
Right. So I think on Monday, we can expect the governor to let us know what Texas businesses can begin the process of reopening. Earlier this week, he did two separate radio interviews. He mentioned restaurants, hair salons, and retail outlets, but stressed that he's seeking approval from medical advisors and on the business reopenings, and that the businesses will be reopened under new standards.
Apparently, this wouldn't be the same in all places either, right? He's looking to health officials to sort of help him guide which counties go sooner than others and that kind of thing.
Right. So Harris and Dallas County have remained hot spots, and local leaders there continue to express concerns about reopening the economy too quickly. But at the same time, we have some rural counties with few or no cases. So Abbott has suggested that the announcement's implementation could vary by county, just depending on how prevalent the virus is in each place.
One thing it does appear to be changing already, this back and forth over abortion access in Texas. This sort of came out of an executive order having to do with elective surgery, as I recall, right?
Right. So it seems like forever ago. But in late March, the governor postponed all surgeries not deemed medically necessary. Attorney General Ken Paxton said that extended to abortions, but a new order from Abbott that took effect on Wednesday allows more procedures to resume in healthcare facilities that agree to reserve a certain number of beds for coronavirus patients. So with this now underway, the ban on all abortions in Texas during the pandemic appears to be over.
Interesting. I want to get back to the differences in some of the bigger counties compared to some of the more rural counties in Texas. There's a dispute right now in Harris County over an order from the Harris County judge about the use of face masks. What's that about?
Right. So Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo ordered Wednesday that residents starting Monday must wear face masks for the next 30 days. And if they don't, they could face a fine up to $1,000. And it's facing a pretty swift criticism from some GOP leaders, including Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and U.S. Representative Dan Crenshaw, who represents the Houston area.
And now, as I understand it, there's a legal challenge to this. But this order is set to take effect, if I'm not mistaken, on Monday, right? Anyone who's over the age of 10 would have to wear a mask or they could get cited and fined up to $1,000.
Yeah, that's correct. And to the lawsuit you mentioned, I think one of the main criticisms is that Hidalgo is exceeding her authority by implementing an order that's more restrictive than that of the governor.
And so far, I believe she has not commented, at least to the Texas Tribune, as I read. Of course, you can read all about it, too, over at texastribune.org. That's where Alex Samuels is political reporter. Alex, good to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, of course.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Well, well, well done, Barr, our social media editor. What are you seeing on this Friday?
Friday. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm hearing from a lot of listeners about our conversation surrounding Willie Nelson's B-Day celebration coming up.
Uh-huh.
You know, online we are asking our pals out there what their favorite Willie moments include, and they have not disappointed. Good wide range of responses here via Twitter. Karen Prawl Santana adds that her favorite is his version of Poncho and Lefty. Classic there. I believe that's a Towns Van Zandt original.
Yes, yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Michelle King, she says, my heroes have always been cowboys, her favorite Willie tune. David Brockman, he's having a little trouble grasping the restriction of just one favorite, but he adds, definitely. But Nightlife is definitely one of them.
Oh, that's great. Absolutely.
Yeah, classic. Early one, I believe, there. Sarah Gilliland, she adds that Hello Walls is on the soundtrack of her childhood. Also a fan of the Both Sides Now album. And our friends here at KETX, they say it's a classic, but Shotgun Willie is definitely one of the favorites. The album, the entire album, is so good. You know, David, I picked up a cassette version of it a few months back at a thrift store when we were able to do things like that. Sounds good on the old tape deck there. You know, in our household, got to say the Stardust LP has been getting a whole lot rotation there. His album of standards there. Yeah, real good.
That's
one.
A good one.
Quarantine soundtrack. So that's going to be a lot of fun to look forward to that special broadcast this weekend.
That's going to be, just to be clear, that's going to be on KUTX if you're in the Texas capital city. If you're not, you can tune in online. You know, this internet thing is still up and running.
Yeah, thing expect so, and should be available there on KTX.org. Lots of fun stuff to listen to there. That'll be a real blast. Lots more to talk about, you know, on our Facebook page. For some reason, lots of people are talking about sunshine and bleach. For some reason,
Bleach. It sounds like something that might be injectable, or maybe not.
Possibly so. You know, I think we could all use a little ray of sunshine in these trying times, David. So obviously, head on over to the Texas Standard Facebook page there at facebook.com/Texas Standard for lots of folks chiming in on that one, along with that and all the other news of the day and week. Hopefully, we'll get a little respite from it here heading into the weekend, David, but you never know.
Yeah. Just to be clear, the Lysol is warning against internal use of disinfectants, no matter what you might hear from any other source. Hey, listen, we're out of time for the big broadcast, but the weekend's getting started. You can keep up with all the news in the meantime over at texasstandard.org. I'm going to be back here on Monday along with Wells and the rest of the team. We hope you'll join us. Till then, I'm David Brown wishing you a wonderful weekend.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Waldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington family. Would your company or organization like to be a sponsor as well? Contact your local station for opportunities within your community. For statewide sponsorships, visit texaspublicmedianetwork.com.